Deutschlandfunk. Sport am Samstag.
Terrible flooding in West Germany with hundreds of football pitches, gyms and training grounds destroyed. Rising temperatures, which forces athletes to compete more often in dangerous heat in the summer. And in the winter, the snow is melting or not even falling, which leads to cancellations of winter sport events. All of this is the result of the climate crisis, a crisis which affects the world of sport already and will be much more. But sport is not just a victim, it's also a culprit, with athletes traveling a lot by plane and hundreds of thousands of fans driving to events. And therefore, the message of the newest IPCC report is also directed at the sporting industry. We have a chance to combat the climate crisis, but we have to act now. And about the possible ways to do that, I'm talking with David Goldblatt, a British sport journalist and author, who wrote last year a comprehensive report about global sport and the climate emergency. Hello, Mr. Goldblatt.
Hi.
Mr. Goldblatt, the new IPCC report has been published this week, this Monday. Do you have the feeling that the world of sport paid any attention to it?
I mean, looking at the headlines, I would say the world of sport didn't. But then, you know, who did last week, given the situation in Ukraine and beyond? It's almost like nobody in the world is actually paying sufficient attention to what is going on in the IPCC report. So I wouldn't particularly target the sports world. I mean, we're all, I would say, pretty guilty. That said, in the last year or so, the world of sport has finally roused itself, and there has been more engagement with the issue of the climate crisis in the global sports industry than there has been before. So, for example, at COP26 in Glasgow last November, the presence of the sports industry, both as a media story but as also as part of the negotiations and the debates, was significantly higher than we have before. The main instrument for organizing the global sports industry's response to the climate crisis, the UN Sport for Climate Action Framework, received more energy and more time at a COP than it has done before. And you're finding, you know, albeit small scale, an increasing number of sports federations and sports institutions really beginning to grapple with this. So there's grounds for pessimism and there's grounds for optimism.
Well, then let's talk for the first part of our interview about maybe the pessimistic part. How big is the carbon footprint of the sport industry? What are your estimates?
Well, nobody really knows because no one has really done the maths yet. But let's say that the global sports industry is worth something between $500 billion and $750 billion a year. That's a kind of crude global estimate. And that doesn't include the gambling industry and it doesn't include the sportswear industry, both of which, of course, are entirely parasitic on the wider sports complex. But let's just say it's around that figure. That's about 0.8% of global GDP. Now, sport is clearly not as carbon intensive per unit of economic output as, say, something like cement production, but then it's probably more carbon intensive than a whole bunch of other economic activities like, I don't know, recreational singing. So let's just, for the sake of argument, say that it's somewhere in the middle. It's about an average for the global norm, which turns into 0.8% of global emissions. That may not sound much, but then that's the equivalent of a small European nation state, you know, Poland, Spain, countries like that. And nobody is giving these guys a pass when it comes to the climate crisis. So at that level alone, on that guess alone, sport is a significant contributor. And like every other cultural and economic institution on the planet, it's going to have to make major changes to bring its carbon footprint down.
Are the federations and clubs aware of these emissions and are they tackling the issue? You mentioned it before that you kind of seem that there was in the last year kind of reckoning, but how many federations and clubs are really tackling the issue?
So looking on it on a positive end, the UN Sport for Climate Action Framework probably has around 300 to 400 signatories. most of the international sports federations, you know, World Athletics or International Table Tennis or FIFA are members. A smaller but significant number of national sports federations and a small number of well-known sports clubs and franchises are members. You know, two or three in the Bundesliga itself, four members of the Premier League, the New York Yankees, etc. So at the leading edge, you've got a small number of sports federations and sports clubs who are both signed up to the mission and really beginning to do something about it. So, for example, World Athletics has a pretty comprehensive 10-year plan to halve its carbon emissions and then bring them down to zero by 2050. Or the plans for the European Football Championships in Germany in 2024 have, on paper at any rate, a really exceptional commitment to reducing carbon emissions and offsetting what they can't reduce. This, of course, though, is a drop in the ocean compared to the numbers of sports federations and institutions that are not involved. And this is a real problem.
May I interrupt at sure. this point? Do you know or can you guess from your research what determines if a federation or a club is going forward with actions against the climate crisis and what determines if a federation does not act?
So first of all, you've got to be in the global north. Overwhelmingly, you know, the members who have signed up to the program are from the United States or Canada, Northern Europe, overwhelmingly Britain, Germany, a few Scandinavians, and some Japanese and Australasian members. But beyond that, we have almost no commitment and no engagement from the Global South. We have almost no engagement at the moment from grassroots organizations. We have almost no engagement from the sportswear industry and the manufacturing industry that sustains sport. So at the moment, it's a small number of clubs and institutions, overwhelmingly, as I say, Northern Europe and North America, generally pretty wealthy and successful already, so a little bit of room for maneuver in their budgets, perhaps. I mean, there are exceptions. There are smaller clubs like Forest Green Rovers, who are in the fourth level of English football, who would be pioneers. And there are a small number of international sports federations like sailing, for example, not particularly wealthy or well-known, who have got enthusiastic and committed leadership. And that's often one of the things that makes the difference. But we're very much right at the beginning of this journey. And we need every single sports federation at a global and national level, every single professional sports organization, every major mass participation sports movement in the world absolutely needs to be signing up and engaging in this now.
So what can and should clubs and federations do in order to combat the climate crisis?
I mean, at one level, it's sort of pretty simple. The vast majority of the carbon emissions produced by sport come from energy consumption, construction, transport, and food and drink, and dealing with waste. Probably the most single important thing that every sports organization can do is change your energy supplier and invest in energy efficiency. Every single stadium everywhere in the world should be run on low energy lights. Nobody should be buying fossil fuel electricity. Nobody's transport should be based on petrol or diesel-based cars. Everybody needs to move to electric now. In terms of transport, and it was interesting that you mentioned it at the top of the piece, this is a more demanding and complex thing for sport because certainly for international tournaments, the carbon studies that have been done say the majority of sports emissions come from the transport of fans to and from stadiums. And this is something that sport is going to have to engage with, but it can't engage with it by itself. We're all locked into pre-existing carbon-heavy systems of transport infrastructure and pricing. Sport can go so far, but it's going to have to be part of a much bigger and wider debate about urban transportation systems. Meantime, every single organisation in the world needs to take a leap out of the Bundesliga's plans, which is, you know, you have a ticket for a game, any game. This has got to be free public transport. You know, they've got to take a leaf out of Werder Bremen's book, which is to say within a third to half a mile of the stadium on match day, you cannot have private parking of motor cars. We're going to have to see an enormous and transformatory switch in the transport systems that we use to get us to and from sport. And I should say athletes, though, of course, part of this, are probably no more than 3 or 4% of the carbon emissions. Certainly, if you look at the most detailed studies of football clubs in Northern Europe. Then there's a question of construction. I mean, we're just going to have to stop pouring cement. We cannot build any more stadiums based on super high carbon intense materials. And the technology is there to do something about it. Forest Green Rovers now have planning permission to build the first wooden sports stadium in Britain for over a century, whose carbon emissions are, you know, so much lower than they would be if it was built out of conventional steel and concrete. And then there's food. You know, we're going to have to make a switch all across our society to plant-based low-carbon foods. And, you know, much as I and everybody loves the traditional, you know, pork-based and beef-based sausage, which most football in most of the world is committed to, this is a process that we're going to have to begin to change. We're going to have to be offering alternatives.
How optimistic are you that these changes that you just described will happen soon?
Depends what you mean by soon. I mean, some of these things, of course, are happening right now. I mean, I think if we leave it to sheer voluntarism, if we're just expecting organisations to do the right thing, I think it's too late. We're going to have to move to a situation where this is going to be the expected norm. I mean, again, the Bundesliga is introducing a form of environmental audit alongside its annual financial audit for clubs. The precise details are not clear yet, but clearly it's going to be a prerequisite of being in the Bundesliga that you have some kind of carbon reduction program. I think that's going to have to be the norm for every single kind of professional sport everywhere. We're going to have to look to international bodies to require national sporting bodies to get with the program. We're going to have to look at national bodies requiring lower level local bodies to get with the program. We're going to have to look at professional leagues and institutions to require their individual clubs and members to begin this program. I mean, once we are actually on the road, there are so many quick gains to be made. This is not technologically or even socially that complicated to do. We can make enormous changes in a very, very small amount of time. And what would be so powerful about that is that sport is poised like no other cultural phenomena to spread and to normalize and to accelerate that message. I mean, that's the thing with the politics of the climate crisis. It needs a kind of universal level of commitment. And sport provides an opportunity to reach demographics and groups who are currently not engaging, to make what seems fanciful or difficult seem normal and possible. And above all, it draws on a reservoir of belief that collective action works. In a very individualized world, sport's one of the last places where we generally believe that the team actually wins, that we can collectively raise our game when the time comes. And that is a very precious cultural resource that the sports industry holds in its hands. If it could put its own carbon house in order and mobilize those kinds of cultural energies, it could make a really significant difference to the wider politics of climate change.